morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 255, and really excited to have Clay Mosier, the best way to describe you, coach, basketball lifer. I think that's an accurate description.
Yeah, it's been a long time. I'm on going on year number 43
here. Yeah, awesome. So, and native Nebraskan for a few years of his life anyway. So there is the Nebraska connection here, but excited to have Coach on.
I left there when I was five.
Five? Was it five? Okay.
Yeah,
yep.
I was five, yeah.
And then went up to Minnesota, eh?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. We will jump into that in just 1 second. Before we get to that, we are going to we want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 141st and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, have them go see Dr. Kevin or Dr. Heidi. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, subscribe, download, rate, review, whether you're on iTunes, Spotify, any other listening platform, give us 5 stars, say nice things. We move up in the rankings when folks do that. So if you'd be so willing to do so, that would be great. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. And that's enough of that stuff. Let's get down to business. Coach Mosier, how you know we're it's a Tuesday night here. We're just kind of hanging out here, and I'm gonna take a wild guess. Did you have some hoops on the TV before I called?
Yes, and I still do.
And you still do. All right. What game are we watching right now?
Right now I'm watching the end of the half with the Florida State LSU game. LSU almost just turned it over, spit it out for a wide open three off the loose ball. Offensive board, which is the SEC's favorite thing to do, jump ball. So I'm watching the SEC ACC challenge. This is my second game of the night. I watched the Arkansas Miami game from start to finish, and now I'm catching the tail end of some of these others.
Gotcha.
The SEC, to my knowledge, has not lost yet. I think they're 4-0.
Okay. All right. We were watching Nebraska women on Big Ten Plus at our place, my wife and I were before I was recording. So, but I am not quite the multitasker that you are. You could watch hoops. We could talk on a podcast. If you're baking a cake right now, I'd be really, really impressed, Coach. So,
I'm actually folding clothes.
There we go. Great stuff. So, let's get this started the way we normally do, Coach. You know, tell us a little bit about yourself, your basketball journey, and it's been a long and winding road for you to, but for folks that don't know about you, Coach, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself.
You know, really, Marty, I got a little bit of everything in my background. So, you know, it's just a game that I grew up loving. It was a game that as a kid I was pretty good at. And it's, you know, something that I think that when kids are good at something, they migrate toward it. So in my case, it was not algebra or chemistry or physics. It was basketball, and I've just made a life of it. I still love it. I love to play it. I love to coach it. I love to talk about it. I love to be around it. And I've been at several levels. And the reason I can't say all levels is because I'm assuming a large portion of your audience might be high school coaches. I have actually never coached at the amateur level of basketball.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that does make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all been, amateur is the wrong way to say it, although it depends on what you see now as the college guys. I've never coached at the high school level or the scholastic level. Let's put it.
Okay. Some of your stops along the way varied, including a stop in China at one point, right, Coach?
Yes, sir. I was there in 2005-2006. Mm-hmm. I coached the Yilin Tigers, which was in what they call the CBA, which is the Chinese Basketball Association. It's their top league. Mm-hmm. It's the league that Yao played in, although Yao was in the States playing for the Rockets when I was in China. Mm-hmm. But, you know, good league, fun league. Tough way to make a living, but I'll never regret doing it. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about Chinese culture. I learned a lot about the world and the way they perceive the United States and, you know, the political differences between our country and China's are fairly vast, you could say. Mm-hmm. So, you know, interesting time of my life. And my wife, who I have two children with, our first date, she's actually from a little town about 45 minutes from me.
Mm-hmm.
Where I went to high school, and our first date was in Beijing, China.
Wow, that's quite the opener.
Yeah, pretty interesting.
Yeah, awesome. A new thing to the podcast brought up by Karen Self. So I'm calling this the Karen Self, a pen and a napkin moment. Coach, when was the first time that you remember starting to scratch out the X's and O's on a napkin or on a piece of paper or whatever it may be?
You know, probably around the age of 8 or 9, somewhere mm-hmm. in there. You know, just watching games. And of course, now in this day and age, I've worked for so many teams, I've got several fancy grease Fords that I could use, but but back in those days, it was just whatever you could get your hands on.
Uh-huh.
You know, the page of a coloring book or whatever it might be. But you know, sit and watch the games with my dad a little bit, and he was, you know, he wasn't as broadly interested as I was. It was mostly football and baseball we would watch, and
uh-huh.
of course in those days, I was born in 1962, so there wasn't as many options in the old arsenal in terms of watching games in those days either. And
sure.
Pretty much just Saturday and Sundays.
Yep. You coach, you went to high school, graduated from Wisconsin Lacrosse, and then you had the fortune of working for one of the legends of the game, gone far, far too soon, of course, the legendary Jim Valvano down at North Carolina State. And, you know, you spoke about it briefly at the USA clinic that we met at a couple months ago. Just tell, you know, memories of Coach V, some of the things that you learned from him, you know, just had to be, you know, like stepping into a master's class, you know, is the perfect time in your life to learn from such a, and I think people often forget how good of a basketball coach Jimmy V was. I mean, he was a master tactician, understood the game, you know, looked outside the box, all of those different things. And it just had to be a great learning experience for you so early in your career.
Yeah, you know, so the way that came about, and you don't do it that way anymore. I mean, the process has changed, which, you know, this game is ever evolving. It evolves every day, which is why I watch games. You know, it's, you know, I always see something where I go, oh, that was interesting, or I don't agree with that, or I didn't like that, but I love this. And, you know, I'll make a note of it and go back and watch it on film and kind of add it or delete something from my, you know, as you saw, like my arrows in the quiver, like always having being prepared for every situation. But how I came about working for Jim at NC State was starting in 1985, my summer job was to work basketball games.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in school at the University of Wisconsin Lacrosse at the time, and I packed up all of my worldly belongings at the beginning of every summer into a 1976 Ford Maverick. It held everything I owned.
A fine automobile.
Yes, fine automobile. Yeah, it was white with a blue vinyl top, but it actually the blue looked rusty because the vinyl was all gone. It was just left with the rusty part of the roof. And I would just head out and work camps, like basically from week to week to week, and pretty much for the entire summer. And there wasn't a ton of money in it, but what you did get was you got a doctorate level of education from other coaches around the country, and you got a place to sleep because they'd give you a dorm room and something to eat, just as you know, because I know you work camps. And,
yep.
And then they'd give you a couple hundred dollars at the end of the week, which seemed like a lot of money in those days to me. And I know it doesn't anymore, but it, I worked camps anywhere from, it was mostly in the southeast to the northeast. I worked all the way from LSU to Syracuse, Holy Cross, Georgia Tech, Carolina, NC State. I actually even stopped 1 week in a place called Pearl River Junior College, which is in Poplarville, Mississippi, with a friend of mine. So I just every summer I did that. And one of the camps that I worked early on was in North Dakota, North Dakota State, actually, when Dave Benther was at North Dakota and Irv Inger was at North Dakota State. I would start with those because they're in the Midwest and they tended to get out of school a little earlier. So then I'd head to the east, and one of the camps I worked was NC State. Starting in 85, I worked there every summer, and they had 3 weeks of camp, and I worked all 3 weeks, all three summers. 85, 86, 87, and I also worked a couple of weeks of Kay Yao's camp. And for any of the folks out there that coach girls basketball or follow women's basketball closely, we'll know that Kay was the
Legend.
1990s, yeah, she's a legend, 1996 Olympic gold medal winner for our country in the for the women. And so I got to know Kay really well, and she was still coaching there when I got hired there. And then in 19 Or in August of 1987, he hired me full time. And so at the age of 24, if you do the math, I was a bad student. So I'd just gotten my college degree, and you should not be getting your college degree at 24. For you kids listening out there, it should be more around the 22 range. But I had a lot of fun, and
Those are just details now, Clay. That doesn't matter anymore.
I know my mom was not happy about it. So at the age of 24, I was actually a bench coach at NC State, and had a wonderful time with him. We were number three seed my first year there. We were number five seed my second year there. Made it to the Sweet 16, lost to Georgetown in 89. But the things I learned from him, Marty, were like immeasurable. First of all, he's in my mind, he's the best in-game adjustment coach I've ever seen or been around. And he just had an incredible feel for the game, and he could feel when things were about to turn. And so, unlike most coaches, and the reason I say he's one of the best I've ever been around is, unlike most coaches, he doesn't adjust after, too far gone from where you've been to where you are. Is that he had a great knack for anticipating it going south, and he would adjust before it went south. And you don't see many coaches do that. You wait. They tend to do it. They tend to wait until the damage is done. And but he had this thought in his head, and I might have spoken about this in Iowa, I don't know, but he called it the anatomy of the game. And he had it broken down into certain segments. And when things were not going the way he thought they should within certain segments, he would change. And I've never seen a coach before or since do that.
What was he looking for in that way, Clay?
So what he typically did is he was, in his own way, it was analytical, although the analytics as we know it today certainly did not exist yet. But what he would say is, so we would know, like you'd know from scouting an opponent, about when they would substitute, who they would substitute for, who would be coming in the game, where we would have to substitute. And we had one particular player, especially my first year, that was a little foul prone, so he was kind of a wild card. You didn't know from game to game if he was going to get himself in foul trouble or not. But he would just say, like, I think the score at the end of the first 5 minutes is going to be around this area. It's going to be, whatever. In college basketball, it'd be 12 to 10. And at the end of the second 5 minute part, he would think it should be like 21 to 19 or something like that. And if it wasn't in that ballpark, his gut would just tell him to change. And that's what we do. So he was looking for the score of the game and where he felt like the game could be. And he would even go so far as say, I think at this stage, so and so will have his second foul. Like, so people won't remember this unless you've got really old people listening to this, Marty. I don't know what your age, what your demographic is.
It's varied. So just let the stories come, Clay. Just let the stories come.
So like for instance, when we played North Carolina, J.R. Reed was there.
Yep.
And J.R., you know, J.R. was a great college player. He was, played in the NBA for a long time. Was not a great pro, but he was really, really high level college player.
Yep.
But he was also a little bit foul prone. So,
yep.
Like when we played them, you kind of hoped and worked towards putting him into foul trouble. And if you could do that, then then that segment of the game will have gone the way he thought it was going to go. And we would just keep rolling with how we were doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And so those were the kinds of things he was looking for. And it was very, very analytical, but also not like official analytics. It was nothing. We never wrote it down. Like we didn't write it down.
Uh-huh.
But he did have me, which I'd never seen anybody up until that time. And I never saw anybody do it till way later. But one of my responsibilities on the bench was to keep track of the five minute score for all 8 5-minute segments.
Uh-huh.
And, he may look at me and go, what was the score? What was the score in this 5-minute segment? And I'd go, well, it was, 9-7. And so he would kind of just ponder that for a moment. He might do something about it. He might not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think, though, that's a couple of good points to make, though, Clay, especially like for high school coaches listening, because, high school, most, I don't want to say most, a lot of high school coaches are teaching, you got a full-time job. Obviously, it's not something that you're doing as a full-time job, even though it is a full-time job. So you don't have the time to do the great analytical breakdown the way you can do it at the college or the professional level. But you can have those discussions before the game with your coaching staff. Hey, if Billy gets his second foul before the start of the second quarter, what are we going to do here tonight? Or, different things like that, that you can have those key points that you can kind of anticipate with both your team and the opponent and try to anticipate those things happening before they even happen and then have a plan for it to happen. Again, without having the ability of, and it's better with huddle and different computer programs that we have today, but it's still not the same. But that's something that we can do as high school coaches.
Right. So, there's no doubt. There's like every year it gets better and better or more robust, better might be that's up for interpretation, I guess. But, there's more, it's more robust than it used to be. There's more information available. And you can choose to use it. You can choose not to use it. You can choose how to use it. You can choose not to use it at all. But if you do use it, how are you going to use it? And the one thing that I would have always cautioned people with, for instance, college analytics is way behind the times, particularly in basketball. And the reason being is that everything like at the NBA level, which I've had the good opportunity and, unbelievable opportunity to spend a good portion of my career in the NBA, is all of those analytics are done by motion sensored cameras.
Yep.
So it's all like it's nailed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because the computers are doing it for you.
Yep.
Where in college, they're still just going off of box scores. And you can learn a lot from the box scores. I study box scores in depth.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that they're always completely correct.
Yep.
Or it might not tell the same story. And the other thing that really affects college basketball in the analytical realm is, I'll give you an example, and I won't tell you who the player was, but we played, but I will tell you who the team was, because I think I brought it up at the clinic. We played Mississippi Valley State in an MTE, which Danny Hurley's made MTE famous now for multiple team events. up until then.
And he's never playing in one ever again now. So
I know. Yep. Up until Danny Hurley said it, the normal fan, even people that really follow the game close, had no idea what an MTE was or that it even existed.
Mm-hmm.
But Danny Hurley all of a sudden has made it, really popular and the top of everybody's minds. But so you're playing Mississippi Valley State, first game of the year. And we just clobbered them by 60 points.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to pick on Mississippi Valley State, but I've said this before. Like, I don't even know why they have a program. Like, they're, if you look at them right now, I think they've won three games, but none of them are against Division I competition.
Yeah.
They historically go 1-27.
Yep.
2-26. And it just, like, it bothers me from a standpoint, like, well, like, what are you doing with that down there? Like, who's having any fun with it?
Who's benefiting from it as well? Yeah.
Who's, because clearly they're not benefiting financially. But anyway, my point is, so we get there, we had a kid on our team opening night that blocked 9 shots that game. Okay. So 9 shots was nine block shots. And then he blocked 2 or 3 in the next one. He blocked 2 or 3 in the next one. They're both low level, like way lower opponents than level opponents than what we were. So he's got like 15 block shots, maybe 18 block shots with 3 or 4 games played.
Mm-hmm.
And that was enough to make him the number one shot blocking player in the country for like a month. And then we started playing better competition. He might get one here, one there, but he'd have games where he wouldn't have any. And the whole point to that is that the vast difference in level of play in the college game is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, if Mississippi Valley State played Auburn, it's possible they could lose by 100. And I'm not being facetious about that.
Yeah.
You know, Arkansas just beat a team by 74.
Yep. I saw that. Yep.
And it was a division where I was at the game. And the coach of Maryland Eastern Shores is a friend of mine. And I just was sick to my stomach for him. And they were trying their tails off. But the reality of it was, and I think Arkansas would actually even, admit to this, they weren't great. They were really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
They had a whole nother gear they could have gone to, and they still won by 7-4.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's where the analytics gets a little screwy in the college game.
Yeah.
That and the fact that everything's just done off of box scores,
mm-hmm.
but there's never any factoring in of like when you go to Ken Palm or you go to College Basketball Reference or any of those kinds of things. There's never any factoring in of level of competition.
Yeah. Yeah. And having some sort of, mathematical formula to account for that as well. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
As we enter into this holiday season, coaches, you know what would make a great gift for you this year? It would be a copy of Kings of Their Court, the story of the 2020-2021 season here in Omaha, 3 ranked teams in the top 25 in the country. And you're going to hear the personal and professional stories of players like Hunter Salas and Chucky Hepburn, Frankie Fiddler, William Kyle, coaches like Tim Cannon, Josh Ludke, and Doug Woodard. Yeah, just a terrific, terrific story. A crazy time period in our country with quarantine, politics, George Floyd, and everything in between. Yours for only $19.99. Go to Amazon, go to Books, look up Kings of Their Court, and order a copy of that today. It's going to be a great stocking stuffer for you, for somebody that you love. Tell your wife, tell your spouse, tell your kids, hey, I would love to have a copy of this book and have something to read here and to just read about a great basketball story. Kings of Their Court, available on Amazon.com today. When you're looking at box scores, Clay, what are you looking at? Because again, I think that's something that's relatable for any coach to look at. And you're asking who's listening. I don't know. I know a lot of people listen, and it's from all over the country and all over the world. But I think there's high school coaches, college coaches, junior high coaches, professional coaches. I think they're all over the banner. But I think box scores are something that we can all relate to. So as somebody that really, really dives into the analytics, when you're just looking at the simple box score on, let's say, ESPN.com or on, if we're high school coaches, you're looking at it at Huddle or whatever, what are some of the key things you're looking at?
Well, one of the things you can't find on ESPN is they won't have the miscellaneous stats. Like, they don't have points in the paint. They don't have points off of turnovers. They don't have second chance points.
Yep.
They don't have those categories of things. So for those, you need to get an actual NCAA box score, like the box score they do at the person at the game that prints it out.
Yep.
And they're They're somewhat difficult to get because you have to be NCAA affiliated to get to them, as far as I know. And if somebody knows different, you know, let me know. Because the other thing that you get along with those box scores, so first of all, you get like a, it's like I call it a full book. Like it's a full book, and it's about 20 pages long. And what it does is it has the box score for each half. It has the box score. So there'll be a, you know, a, like the game box score, and then there'll be the first half box score, and then the running, the play by play, the running play by play, and then it'll have the second half box score, and it'll have the running play by play, and then it'll have shot charts and all those sorts of things. So by the time you get it, it's about, you know, 15, 20 pages long or whatever. But one of the things I love about it is I will want to go back to a play that I remembered that it's, you know, was, I thought was a key point in the game or a turning point or whatever. And I can go back to the play-by-play and say, okay, you know, I think it was around the 10-minute mark. And then I go find it. It'll be like at 9:54. And then I want to go watch that clip, you know, among many, many other clips that I want to watch. I want to go back and see what really happened, why it happened, who it happened to, who made it happen, who didn't prevent it from happening, you know, all those kinds of things. So those are the kinds of things I look for. And then there's some standard, like there's three standard metrics that I have when I look at a box score, and I'll tell you if I think a guy played well or he didn't play well. And that's, and there's some wiggle room in there, like maybe he had a great defensive game or whatever. But the three categories are this: is its points per shot,
okay,
it is assist to turnover ratio, and it is rebounds per minute.
Okay.
So the way I calculate whether a guy is a good rebounder or not is how many, he, you know, what rebounds he gets on a per minute basis. And then, of course, that is also then clearly defined by the position. So for a big man, like a big dude that you count on rebounding, 0.30 rebounds per minute is elite.
Okay.
So that means if he plays 30 minutes, he's going to grab 9 boards. If he plays 40 minutes, he's going to grab 12. Now, clearly, guys can have bigger games than that. But if you're doing that night in and night out against all levels of college competition, you're a rebounder. So there's, you know, there's some anomalies out there. Like Oscar Shibway used to have 19 rebounds on a regular basis. You know, but he also was a freak. And, you know, and there's not always, you know, not every team has a freak, and not every team has to worry about dealing with a freak. But I coached against Oscar a couple times, and keeping that dude away from the offensive glass was next to impossible. Even though it was like item number one on the Sky Report, you know, that's what great players do. Like, great players are the killers of Sky Report.
Absolutely, yeah. That's why they're great.
That's why they're great.
Yep.
And that's why coaches are nuts. So those are the three things that I'll look for, and then I will I've got a little chart that I'll type that stuff into, and then I will color code it. And by just like looking at a glancing at a color coded piece of paper, I can tell you if a guy had a good game or not.
Gotcha.
And so it's all getting it to boil down to that. And so I'm a big points per shot guy. So if you've got a guy who averages 20, that's fantastic. If it takes him 20 shots to do it, not so fantastic.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
If he scores 20 and he only takes 15 shots, fabulous. So yeah. I'll give you an example of this, and your listeners can go look this up when they hear this. But I have a personal vested interest in a kid by the name of Zaxton King, who's at Missouri State.
Okay.
He's the nephew of a family friend. And so I look at his box score every night. He's a freshman from Lawrence High School in Lawrence, Kansas, and is with Kwanzaa Martin right now at Missouri State. He starts as a freshman. He's had an excellent season so far. He's one of the most efficient freshman I can remember watching, and this is very nerdy. Like, people are going, like, what are you doing looking at the Missouri State box scores every night? Well, I do.
Yeah.
But Zaxton King had a game the other night, and I believe that, I'm pretty sure it was just their last game, I don't even know who they played. There was a night they had a nice win, but Zaxton King scored 12 points on 3 shots.
Wow.
And people go, well, like, this guy's a lunatic. Like, what is he talking about? But here's what happened. He went 2 for 2 from 3, so there's 6.
Yep.
He made his only 2-point field goal. So yep. There's 8.
8. Yeah.
And he went 4 for 4 from the free throw line.
Yep.
So he's got 12 points on 3 shots. So that is that's what you'd call a 4.0 points per shot, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. That blows the roof off of any analytical study that you could ever do. Yeah.
So the only question, and I texted it to Quanzo, because he and I've known each other for a long time, and I said, Quanzo, like, why on earth is Zaxton only shooting it 3 times?
That's on you, Quanzo. That's on you, man.
He should be shooting it 15 times. Like, good Lord. Like she'd rather have him be a 2.5 for that night, but get up 10 and 12, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that kid's been ridiculous. So that's what I mean by points per shot. And some people don't factor in the free throws, but if you don't factor in the free throws, all you're talking about then is the effective field goal percentage.
Yep. Yep.
So that's why I throw in the free throws, because when you look at all the elite scores at the NBA level, those dudes all get to the free throw line at a really, really high rate.
Absolutely. Yep. No, the most efficient player that I was able to be around in my career was and I don't know if you'll remember this kid or not. His name was Nate Funk. I was the assistant coach at Sioux City Helan when he was a senior, and he ended up coming down here to Creighton and had a great career at Creighton. But in high school, Nate's senior year, I want to say he averaged 25 a game. And he shot 13 times a game, I think was the number. He averaged 25 a game, and he only shot 13 times a game. Well, how do you do that? Well, he shot like 67% from the field. He just had great mid-range game and got to the rim and only took really good shots. He shot 90% from the line, and he would go to the free throw line 8 to 10 times a game. So if you make 9 two-point shots and you go 8 for 9 from the free throw line, let's say, well, that's 26 points on 13 shots, you know, and just high efficiency. And he's just the most efficient offensive player I've ever been around.
Yeah. So that would be, he'd be a 2.0 guy.
Yeah.
He's scoring 2 points for every shot he takes.
Yep.
Which people go, duh. Yeah. When it goes into you too. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Except for when you're shooting a high volume of shots, it's hard to maintain that.
Correct.
That's the whole point. So
yeah.
But if you just go do a like a simple study and pull up the top 10 scores in the NBA, you'll see that a large portion of what they get done is that they get to the free throw line.
Yep.
Or they shoot a massive amount of threes, which is usually those two things are they're polar opposites. So a guy who shoots a ton of threes doesn't typically also get to the free throw line.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really, really rare people.
Yeah. Yeah. You had a chance and one of your longest stretches in your stops here, Clay, was with the Los Angeles Lakers, and you're a director of basketball strategy, and you got a chance to work with two of the all-time greats, you know, Kobe and for, I think it was just 1 year you were there with when LeBron was there, right?
Yes, but.
Yeah, talk a little bit about your job there with the Lakers and kind of taking all this up and bringing it out onto the floor and kind of how you use this to try to help the team in the best way possible using these formulas and these thought processes and different things like that.
Were those guys the players?
Yeah, they did all right for themselves. I went to college at Briarcliff in Sioux City, Iowa, and they would have got some minutes there. Let's just put it that way.
They'd have gotten some run.
They'd have gotten some run. I think, yeah. I think Coach Nacky would have found a way to got him in the game.
Yeah. Yeah, the smart ones figured out how to get him in the game. So,
yeah.
You know, at that stage of my career, so I've been with the Lakers for like I was with them for 4 years. I had several different titles. I started out as an advanced scout.
Yep.
And I'll just, you know, if you have time, Marty, I'll tell you like a really kind of a funny quick story, but
we got all the time in the world, Clay. It's your time. I'll take you for as much time as you're willing to give me tonight.
Okay. So at that particular in 2011, moving into the 11-12 season, the Lakers were defending champions.
Huh?
But it also was a lockout and we were coming into the next year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was the 66-game season, right?
The 66-game season. That's exactly right. Yep. So at that time, I was coaching the South Bay Lakers. At that time, they were known as the L.A. Defenders.
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened with the L.A. Defenders is the Lakers had them, like, that was their D-League team, not G-League team. They were the D-League still at that point before Gatorade branded them as the G-League.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference at that point was during the lockout, the D-League was playing. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is that the minor league players were not part of the union at that stage. Oh, my God, great pass. So I'm going to get that clip. It's 15:29 of the second half. LSU Florida State, a little like complete parallel hammer screen for a wide open three. Everybody should get their pens and napkins out and write that one down.
There it is. Yes.
So anyway, so the LA Defenders are playing. I think we were about 8-4 at the time. The lockout ends. And I am literally walking off of the floor with the Defenders into our film room. And we had a separate film room from where the Lakers had their film room. But everybody knew the lockout had ended. And so the players were reporting back to the facility for the first time in months. And some listeners may not know this, but when they're locked out, that it's like
it's literally a lockout. They can't go anywhere. Yep.
Right. It's a literal term. They cannot come to the facility. They cannot get treatment. They can't come there and lift weights. They can't come there and have lunch. They can't come there and meet with you. So they are absolutely, you know, the place is stoked. The season is about to begin. I am in the middle of a film session with the D-League team, and they come, you know, I'm summoned out of the room to say, we're hiring you to join the Lakers as the advanced scout. And I said, what? They said, yeah. So you need to go from where you are to over there. So I literally walked from the Defenders film room to the Lakers film room. And it was like 45 steps, you know, like, and all of a sudden I'm in a completely different world. I'm in kind of a state of shock. But I walk in from the dudes on the Defenders team, and we were good.
Uh-huh.
But now I walk in, and here's Kobe, here's Pau Gasol,
yep.
Here's Andrew Bynum, here's Derek Fisher.
Artest was still with him at that point, wasn't he?
Yeah. Meadow was still there.
Yeah.
So I've made this transition from one place to the next, like within the matter of seconds, really.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it started. And so I started there as an advanced scout. The second year they promoted me and I was still an advanced scout, but they gave me a staff. So they changed my title, a little bit more money. And then by year five, they made me into an assistant coach.
Uh-huh.
And they gave me a director of basketball strategy title to go along with it, which basically what that meant was it was my job to interpret and try and make or help the coaches and the players to understand analytics, which was still relatively new at that stage.
Yep. Yep.
And I'd be lying to you if I said it didn't come with a certain amount of resistance.
Sure.
And there were some players that were wide open to it and mm-hmm. completely understood it. There were some that absolutely didn't understand it, didn't want to hear about it. And I won't mention the coach, but we were in the middle of a presentation with the coaching staff, and I had a staff that worked for me, and kids way, way smarter than me. Both of them had doctorates in either statistics or mathematics. And we walk in this room, and they were nervous because they weren't supposed to talk to the coaches. And we had one of the coaches took our presentation and just literally swiped it off the floor and threw it on the floor.
Jeez.
And I felt so bad, not for myself, but for those two young guys who had poured their heart and soul into this.
Yeah.
So we got through the meeting. When those two guys left, the head coach chastised this dude. And like it was, but that was kind of the nature of the beast at that point.
Yeah.
Like not everybody was accepting of it.
You kind of felt like Billy Bean and Moneyball probably a little bit.
Well, I would like to tell you I was more like Jonah Hill, but I was just the guy trying to understand it.
Uh-huh.
But what I did have, honestly, was I had the ability to sit with the analytics, like the brainiacs. I had the ability to sit with them and understand their language and understand what they were talking about. And I had the ability to walk into the locker room and understand that language and what they were talking about. And then I could go to the front office and do the same. And I could go to the ownership level and do the same.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of been, if I have a superpower in any way, shape, or form, I'm not suggesting that I do. My superpower is that I can go from the gutter to the penthouse.
Sure, sure.
And I feel completely at ease in both places.
Yep, yeah. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now, Clay, with your coaching consulting services and talking with staffs. You know, you had kind of mentioned it a little bit down in Kansas City, and it piqued my interest definitely as a guy who doesn't have a team right now to coach, and but you know is obviously still watching a lot of films, still doing a lot of stuff with things. You know, so tell us a little bit about what you're doing right now and reaching out or, you know, talking to coaching staffs, advising them, different things like that.
Yeah. So basically I have clientele kind of all across the board.
Okay.
I've got some high school kids that I consult with who are trying to get into the college ranks. And I'm not talking about top, you know, ESPN top 100 kids. Like they don't need help. Or if they do need help, they have maybe one or two people around them that really know how to help them. And then they got a bunch of other people that have no idea how to help them, but they're trying to take credit for the abilities of that kid. And I know you know what I'm talking about. And I know you've seen those.
Absolutely.
You've seen those scenarios play out.
Absolutely.
Right?
1,000%. Yep. Yep.
So talking more about the kids that are trying to, you know, just get onto an NAIA roster or maybe a Division II roster or a Division III roster, even a non-scholarship junior college situation or a Division II junior college situation. And what they find is that there are really good players everywhere.
Yep.
And you have to be really good to play at any level in college.
Yep.
You really do.
Yep.
Now, so the dudes you get to watch on TV, at least on the major networks, the ESPNs and the, you know, CBS on Sunday mornings and NBC once in a while, and all, like when you see those guys, like those guys they're very, very rare.
Yep.
These people. But there's also, and don't quote me on the number, but it's there's like 1,767 programs in the country that offer basketball.
Wow. Yep.
And that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have any wits about you, if you have any ability whatsoever, you might be able to find a place to go. So I do deal with some of those kids.
Uh-huh.
And just try and say, hey, listen, I know this guy and he's, you know, he's just building his program, or he just got the job and he's going to be looking for players. So I've got, you know, have that aspect. And then I can deal with, you know, big time college coaches, which I have some clients in that realm too, where I just assess their team and you know, just give them some advice from afar as if I'm an assistant coach. But with this complete and absolutely critical and crucial caveat, I'm not beholden to the office politics.
Yeah.
I'm not towing a company line. I'm not saying something because I think someone wants to hear it, because I'm not at risk of losing my job for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I just say what I think and what I believe. And I do it with 42 years of experience at multiple levels. I've had a lot of dudes in the minor leagues that I've put into the NBA. I've had a lot of dudes in college I've put into the NBA. And I, when I say I, not I.
Yeah.
Like, I was part of,
you were part of the process. Jury. Yep.
Yeah, I was part of the jury. You know, very fortunate to be part of the jury. So you go through all that stuff. And for the most part, and sometimes the head coaches, like the rest of the staff is not part of it. They're just saying, oh my God. Like for instance, I don't have Danny Hurley as a client or Connecticut as a client, but I would have loved to be his eyes and ears after Maui.
Yeah.
And to say, hey, Danny, like, let's close the door. Go ahead and throw all the language at me you want. And then we're going to calm down and we're going to try and find solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And here's some things I think you could be doing differently. Here's, you know, some things that you are doing that you absolutely need to keep doing. And sometimes it's as simple as, like, asking them, you know, why are you playing this kid?
Yeah.
Like, what are you seeing in him? Like, what do you think he's going to bring to the table? And that's the one thing that, you know, folks that maybe just got fans on here that, you know, need to grasp onto this, is that you need to know, and I call it reliability. Like, what, when I put you in the game, what can I rely on that you're going to bring to the team?
Mm-hmm.
Are you a defender? Are you a scorer? Are you an organizer? Are you a playmaker? Are you a rim protector? Are you a roller? Are you a three-point specialist? Whatever it is, when we put you in the game, we need to be able to rely on what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean you're clearly not going to play your best game every single night. That's ridiculous.
Sure.
But by and large, night in and night out, we need this from you. Because if we don't get that from you, that means that someone else either has to give us more of what they normally give, or they may, on a rare instance, miraculously give us something that they don't normally give us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as you know, as a coach, it's hard to sleep at night if you're expecting a kid to do something he doesn't normally do.
Yeah. If you're dependent on that.
If you're dependent on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I have overseas clients where, you know, I'll go see, and that's part of why I watch a lot of film, and I'll go to as many games live as I can. And that will not be team related, but that will be prospect related in the college ranks. So,
yeah,
you know, there'll be, you know, I'll see a kid play that is off the radar. So, and then I have international clients that I will send them reports on players. So someone that, you know, is not going to be an NBA player, but is good enough to play Division II in Germany,
mm-hmm.
or is good enough to be a EuroLeague player, yeah. or he'd be fantastic in Australia, or he'd be great in Eastern Europe, he'd be great in Spain, or he'd be, you know, he's a second level kid in Greece, you know, all those sorts of things where you go, this is where I see this kid. He may be under the radar, but take a look at him because he's got a chance. Like, he's going to play for money.
It's just a matter of finding him the right spot. Yeah.
Finding him the right spot. So it's kind of the pro equivalent
mm-hmm.
of being, you know, not being an NBA player, but playing second division in France
mm-hmm.
as it is with a kid in high school that's not a Division One player, but he's going to play college basketball at the end.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Because he's good, but there's you know, good is relative.
Yes. Yeah. And usually, I don't want to say, you know, it's not always a deal, but in a lot of cases, there's your guys that are just athletically freakish and, you know, freakishly skilled. A lot of times the skill levels are relatively close to each other. And a lot of times it's the separator that I've seen, coach, is just the athleticism is a lot of times the separator. Am I wrong? Am I right? Where am I at with that?
No, I think, you know, to play, like, let's say, so you're kind of nestled in between Big Ten and Big 12
yep.
territory, right?
Yep.
Like you have to have a certain level of athleticism to play in either of those two leagues.
Yep.
So generally speaking, if you're if you're just a 6'7", 140-pound three-point specialist, but you're really, really good at it, you probably don't fit at that level. And I'm not saying that you can't. I'm just saying that, you know, because you got it, then you have to look at it and say, okay, he does this spectacularly, but will he be able to get open at this level?
Correct.
Yep. To get those. Like, is he going to be strong enough to take a little grabbing and holding when he's coming off the screens? And is he going to be able to get it off quick enough, his shot off quick enough, you know, when the people closing out to him are longer and quicker and stronger than he is and way stronger than what he's been playing against?
Uh-huh.
You know, that's just one example.
Yep.
But there's, you know, another kid who's, you know, just tougher than nails and takes charges and, you know, does all these sorts of things. Well, does that correlate to the next level if he's just that much tougher and that much stronger and quicker than the people he's playing against in high school, but it doesn't really translate to the next level?
Mm-hmm.
So, athleticism has to be a part of it. But there are occasions where there was a kid who just has such elite skill. And they also, the key component to this is they keep working, they keep working, they keep working.
Yep.
And I'll give you an example, like a real life example is Duncan Robinson.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Yeah.
Like Duncan Robinson started at a Division III school.
Yep.
Which if you look at him now, he's, you know, he's kind of grown into, you know, he's kind of a grown man now, but I saw him when he was coming out of Michigan. So he transferred from Williams College, which is in the Northeast, one of the great Division III, you know, one of the great Division III havens of all time is the Northeast. And he played at Williams, and then he transferred to Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came out of Michigan, and people were curious about him, but they weren't enamored with him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he ended up getting a two-way. We had him in Lakeland on a draft workout. And at that time, the two-way contracts were completely different than they are now. But I thought we should have kept him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we should have taken him on a two-way. And not that I'm suggesting that I knew he would turn out, you know, to have the NBA career.
Yep.
I just thought he was interesting.
Yep. Yep.
It's not in the category I'd put him in.
He was worth taking a chance on, and let's extend this out and let's see what we can, let's see if we can take this clay and mold it a little bit, so to speak. Yep.
Right. And the expenditure you'd have would be a very minimal investment. So if you turn out to be absolutely dead wrong, it didn't cost you that much. And if you turn out to be absolutely spot on, you're going to get a real bargain for that kid because he's not going to have he doesn't have great negotiating power anyway.
Yep.
So he would be one. And then there was another kid, and I'm not making this up, but I don't know if I can remember it, but I think his name was Max Hooper. Do you remember him?
Max Hooper.
Yeah, and he played at some school in Michigan. I'm going to look him up right now, actually. So Max Hooper was kind of in the same situation, where he was a phenomenal three-point shooter, not nearly as big as what Duncan is or was or is.
Uh-huh.
So Horizon League Sixth Man of the Year.
Okay.
They haven't listed it. They haven't listed it at 6'6".
Okay.
I've been standing next to him. I don't believe he's 6'6".
Yeah.
I'm gonna give him 6'4".
Yeah. He must have had his bangs curled that day, as we say in girls basketball coaching. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was the Horizon League Sixth Man of the Year. And this was way back in 15-16, right?
Okay.
So he made 117 threes on 257 attempts.
So okay.
Shot a great percentage.
Yep.
Made 3.34 threes a game at 45.5%, which is phenomenal.
Yep.
He made 7 or more threes in 5 games.
Jeez.
Okay, so elite, elite shooter.
Yep.
But he also never had a professional career.
Yep.
So he would be an example of a kid who had this elite skill, but his athleticism just was, his lack of athleticism was just too much to overcome.
Yep, yep. Couldn't translate.
Right.
Yep, yep.
But he would have been a great story because Max Hooper is clearly a phenomenal name.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. He would have been on SportsCenter at least. So if he wasn't already, Berman or somebody would have came up with a nickname for him. So
yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he started out in the Ivy League, played 2 games, and that was in 11-12. I don't know why. I don't know if he got hurt. This following year, he transferred to St. John's, which seems like a major, major jump. And then he transferred to Oakland, which what's interesting about Oakland, but here's the thing. So in his career, he took 11 twos in his career.
Is it a force field around that 3-point line?
Yeah, but it's not unlike the kid that was there a year ago, Mark.
Sure.
So, the kid they kept talking about, and then against Kentucky, the kid comes out and makes 10.
Oh, the kid from, Oakland. Yeah.
So this is where this kid ended up. So he was at Harvard, went to St. John's, ended up at Oakland. So
yep.
That coach, I can't think of that coach's name at the moment, but.
Oh, yes. I see his face plain as day, but I can't remember. Yeah, go ahead, Clay. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to look him up.
Greg Campy, yep.
Yeah. So Greg Campy was there at the time. He's still there now. And he had a kid that basically had the exact same profile as this kid 10 years later,
mm-hmm.
11, 12 years later. Even. So for that coach, he's looking at a kid and go, you know what? Not everybody's going to want him, but I can make that kid work.
Yep. Yep.
That kid can help me.
Yep.
He probably can't help. He probably can't help Texas Tech.
Yep. But he can help me. Yep.
Yeah, he can help me.
And we can find a role for him.
That's exactly right.
As you study these staffs, Clay, you know, I mean, success leaves a trail. And what are some things that you see with a lot of successful coaches and coaching staffs that you're consulting with, that you've worked with over the years?
Well, first of all, I think the best coaches are extraordinarily smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, like, smart's also a relative thing. Like, you know, are they gonna build a rocket that goes to Mars? Probably not. are they gonna cure some sort of disease that's been incurable? Probably not. But in the realm of the game, they just are smarter. They think about everything. They absorb everything. They observe everything. They hear everything. And I don't know if I talked about this in Kansas City, but like, I'm a big believer in what, if you are going to be good at something, like really, really good, high level good, elite good, is you have to do it with all 5 senses.
Mm-hmm.
You got to hear it. You got to see it. You got to smell it. You got to feel it, and you got to taste it. And if you're not one of those folks, and maybe haven't thought about doing it, but I really believe that you have to be one of those folks. Like you have to, everything in your core has to be involved in the game. So the best ones have that, I believe. And then because they have all of their senses engaged and they see everything, they hear everything, they smell everything, like they smell fear, they smell indecisiveness, they smell confidence, they smell when they smell all that stuff, like you can just sense it, right? Like you've had those players.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And you just go, like, this dude, like, I don't have to think about him.
Yeah.
Because he's going to get this done. Like, he is going to get this done to the best of his ability. But then the other thing is, once you've got that in your wheelhouse, is that you just are absolutely, you know, non-negotiables. I'm big on non-negotiables.
Mm-hmm. Me as well. Yep. Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the opening tip, Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the opening tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here. Just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab. That's probably my favorite thing is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard. And we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success. And it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska. And every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there, you know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month. For two newsletters, that's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically $1 an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So, subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter, folks. You're not going to regret it.
What I mean by that is that you've just got things you're going to like. This is what I believe in,
mm-hmm.
and this is what I'm going to emphasize,
mm-hmm.
and this is what I'm going to tolerate, and this is what I'm not going to tolerate. And if you keep bringing things to the table that I don't tolerate, you're not going to play.
Yeah.
Or if you keep bringing things to the table that I don't tolerate, I'm probably not going to offer you a scholarship.
Which a lot of parents and players don't understand that. Well, I'm good. Yeah, but here's a couple of things that you do, and you consistently do that, and henceforth, you have all of these pros going for you, but I don't see you changing these couple of cons, and I just can't deal with those cons, so I'm moving on from you, and I'm moving on to somebody else.
Yeah. I'll give you an example, and I won't mention names, but this happened. So I got fired by the Lakers in 2019. I'd been there for 8 years. So, you know, no shame in that. Like, 8 years is a long time in one spot in the NBA.
Yep.
And I'm proud of it, and there's reasons I stuck there, and, I'm guessing there must have been reasons they fired me. Like, I'm not entirely sure why to this day, but the whole staff got fired. Everybody.
Yep.
So I come to Arkansas, and the first event that I'm going to from a recruiting standpoint is the NBA PA Top 100.
Okay.
And I've got a great coach on the staff with me. He's widely known in the college ranks to be one of the best recruiters in college basketball. And he's, you know, I'm a newbie. I've not been in college basketball since NC State in 1989. So it's been 30 years.
Yeah. A little bit of change, I'm sure.
Big change.
Yeah.
And And on top, you know, and things like everything had changed. The AAU thing wasn't nearly as robust. Like the, you know, the handlers and all the stuff was completely new. AAU's out of control in certain spots. But he goes, come sit with me. He goes, let's watch this game and then we'll go have lunch and, you know, we'll bring our books and, you know, let's go over your notes. I said, sounds great. So I don't know any of these kids. Like the NBA top 100, I did not know all 100 of them. I didn't know one of them. But I do think I know players.
Yep.
I think I know talent, and I think I know those sorts of things. So we go to lunch, and we're just running through it. And he said, well, what do you think of this kid? And then Tom, he goes, what do you think of that kid? And tell him, and he said, what do you think of that kid? And I said, don't care for him. He goes, really? I said, no, I don't care for him. And he said, why not? And I said, well, because he takes terrible shots. He's a turnover waiting to happen. He's disrespectful to his coaches. He's disrespectful to his teammates. And he is disrespectful to the officials. And he has absolutely horrific body language. I said, so he's not for me.
Yep.
He goes, wow. He goes, you saw all that in that one game? I said, yeah, that's what I saw. I said, and beyond that, I honestly don't care to watch him play again. And he said, he goes, wow. I said, why? He said, well, because he's the number seventh ranked player in the country. I said, I don't care if he's 1A, 1B, and 1C. I said, he's not for me.
Yeah.
So the kid turns out, so if you're the seventh ranked kid, if you're the seventh ranked player in the country, as a, you know, as a high schooler, you should be in the lottery pick area.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
He ended up going late in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And his 1 year in college, he went to a place where they couldn't win. And now, is he talented? Absolutely, he's talented. And yep. He's all-star talented.
Yep.
But he's just that whatever is getting to him, you know, it's affected his whole life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just can't, like, he can't let those things go. Like, he can't be a good teammate. He can't stay off the officials. He can't help his body language for whatever reason. And so those are the kinds of things I would look for when evaluating talent, where it's not like, how's he going to fit in?
Yeah.
How's he going to overcome this?
Mm-hmm.
When adversity hits, how do we pull him out of it? Are we going to have to spend too much energy pulling him out of it?
Mm-hmm.
Is he worth us having to spend all the energy?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, so those are the things I think that a lot of parents don't see.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a dude that consistently takes bad shots. And I've told parents, you know, where I get invited to do a lot of local club, like a practice for a game.
Yeah.
And I'll just tell the parents, like, I won't point a kid out to the parent, but I will say it to them while they're on the floor. I said, you know what? When you take shots like that, you're not fun to play with.
Yeah.
Like you're not fun to play with.
Yep.
So when it's time for them to pass the ball back to you and they don't, and you show all kinds of body language, even though you're normally the one taking the bad shots, I said, that's not fun.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's having any fun. And the beauty of that is that I'm not the one coaching the team. They've just brought me in as a guest coach.
Yeah.
So it's just like my other consulting stuff. Like, I'm just going to tell you the way I see it. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong. It just means that's the way I see it.
Yeah. It's a very... go ahead. Sorry, Clay.
No, but what you can feel in those situations is those kids who feel like they've been wanting to say that for 2 years or however long they've been playing with the guy, they've been wanting to say it.
Oh, yeah. 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 No, no.
And you wonder why the coach hasn't said it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that to the coach. She'll say, by the way, that's actually your responsibility because you're not doing that kid any favors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your job is at times you've got to give some tough love. And your job is to be a truth teller. And a lot of people tell you that they want you to tell you they want you to tell them the truth until you tell them the truth, and then they don't want to hear the truth. When you have a player, when you have a parent, let's say, and you tell them the truth, and they say thank you, and they take it, and they learn from it. Man, that's a keeper right there, isn't it, Clay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
but yeah, but most people don't like the truth.
Yeah, yeah. Even though they say they want the truth, they don't like it. Yeah. So, one last thing here, Clay. If you got time for one more thing.
Yep.
Okay. I love what you're doing on Twitter with stuff I'm seeing or whatever, and you got the eye emoji there. I'm telling you right now. And I'll let Coach give out his socials here at the end. But if you want to keep up with what's going on in college basketball, just get on Coach's Twitter handle, follow him. It's such great detail, spotting trends and analytics, watching teams, watching individuals, different things like that. So I wanted to go home on this with you is just, you know, you're obviously watching a lot of ball. We're multitasking, we're folding, we're ironing clothes, we're doing all sorts of things here tonight. What are some players, what are some teams, what are some coaches that you really like so far this year, Coach?
Well, I mean, some of these are going to be captain obvious, but I think at the moment, Auburn's the best team in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I am fascinated by their team, and I'm also fascinated that early on, and people have forgotten this, I think, because of how good they've played, but they've forgotten that this is a team that had to overcome one of the worst body language episodes that I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yep. Yeah,
and then the next day they get on the plane, and that same kid starts a fight on the plane, and the plane has to turn around and take him home.
Yep.
And somehow, whatever Bruce Pearl and his staff have done, and I've got a great friend on the staff by the name of Corey Williams, who's fabulous, and is a great recruiter. And everywhere Corey goes, they just win. And he was a world champion with the Bulls early in his career.
Uh-huh.
It was also, and I'll be playing Corey here. Corey's going to get more clients than I do out of this, but Corey was also drafted in the NBA, and he was drafted in the NFL and never played a down of college football.
Wow.
So
that's impressive.
Phenomenal guy. But how they overcame that very early adversity is incredibly interesting to me. And when I get a chance to see those guys in person, I say, how did you just make that disappear? Because mm-hmm. that's apparently what they did. Now, I know that kid got in a game in Maui, in one of the games, that, like when they blew out, whoever they blew out in the last game. So that's interesting.
Yeah. I think people have also forgotten about that whole story, Coach, is that plane was headed to Houston to play at the University of Houston, and that just pack of tough dudes, and they went into Houston and beat Houston at Houston, which makes that even a more amazing story. You know, that's just amazing what they were able to do there.
Yeah, well, what that was is that was a bunch of tough dudes against a bunch of tough dudes.
Yep,
and it could have gone either way, but it looked like. If you go back and if you are the kind of watch film, you will never see more bodies on the floor than the Houston. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I watched the game while I was on our walker or whatever you call it, our walking pad. And part of the stuff that I do is I'll watch film and, you know, take some good sets or things that I see as I'm watching film. And I'm like, This is just a bloodbath. I mean, but it was impressive. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, if there was a loose ball, it was like it was the last biscuit in the basket. Like it was like there was some bodies flying all over the place. The officials had no idea what they were doing. But I think Auburn's number one. You know, the thing is, I cannot wait to see how Connecticut responds to this.
Yep.
But you know, the other thing that happened, and there were so many games on Thanksgiving, I was having a hard time keeping up.
Yep.
And then last night there was only like 8, and I didn't find any of them actually interesting, so I didn't do any of the, what my eye caught things. But coming out of Thanksgiving, Providence, Creighton, and UConn all lost 3 in a row.
Yep.
Okay. Villanova is just, I mean, they're just struggling.
Yep.
DePaul and Georgetown, who are trying to learn how to win again.
Yep.
Because they, you know, these are once
very once proud programs. Yep.
But have just like absolutely gone down the tubes for multiple years now. I think DePaul hasn't made an NCAA tournament since 1993.
Jeez.
Which is,
that's amazing to think of it. When we were kids, you know, Terry Cummings and Mark Aguirre and all those guys. I mean, yeah, that's amazing.
Oh, Rod Strickland, David Edwards.
Yeah.
Stanley Brundy was one of the best rebounders that ever played college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, amazing. But so those two teams are undefeated, but neither one of them have played a quad one or quad two team.
Yep.
So they've just loaded up on bad teams that they, you know, that they know they're going to beat. But I also get it.
Yep. Yep.
I get it with them.
Yep.
But there's some programs where you go, are you serious? This is who you're going to play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's, you know, so you can't tell anything from them.
Yep.
Alabama, and I know I'm going SEC heavy, but Alabama will schedule anywhere, anytime. You know they're going to the University of North Dakota to play?
Yeah, I saw that. I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, they're playing. So they're playing at North Dakota, and I think they play, they've got the SEC, ACC Challenge. I think they play tomorrow night, and then they're also playing Creighton.
Yeah, Creighton's going down there in a return game because they played up here last year, yep.
Right. So, you know, Nate and his staff and Ryan Pannone, who's a great friend of mine, like those guys are not afraid to schedule any. They're not afraid to schedule.
Uh-huh.
Columbia University catches my eye because they're 8-0 for the first time since 1960.
Uh-huh.
Missouri State, as I said, you know, is off to a good start. You know, and Kwanzaa's getting that thing turned around, and my man Zach's like incredibly efficient freshman. I also watch a kid from Brown who's got a kid on a team, a family friend, who is a freshman and sophomore, never got to play, and now he's like a walking double double as a junior. And the beauty of him is he just persevered. He never transferred. He just is getting a great education. He's going to have a great life. His name is Landon Lewis. If anybody wants to go look him up, he's a big, about a 6'8" lefty. His dad was a great player. I used to work with his dad. I coached against his dad, who was also a great player. Michigan State's got a Minnesota kid by the name of Trey Holloman, who is the captain there.
Uh-huh.
And Trey Holloman's like he's a throwback.
Yeah,
you know, he's not even starting now, but he stayed there the whole time. He didn't transfer. He could have transferred. I think Marquette is tremendous. I think Marquette right now is holding the Big East up.
Yep.
But I think Marquette is really, really good. I think there's a lot of good teams in the Big 12. UC Irvine is, I believe they're 7-0, but also they're the number nine, they're the ninth ranked defense in the country. So, you know, places like that. So I look at all levels. You know, I watch guys all over there. I think the Mountain West Conference has been a completely underappreciated conference for some time. And I think they're going to be really, really good again. Boise State's good. San Diego State's good. Nevada's going to be good. UNLV's going to be good. Colorado State's going to be good. So, you know, I just watch it all over the board, you know, because I'm a nerd. I'm just a basketball nerd.
Hey. Basketball love nerds love talking to basketball nerds, and this basketball nerd has greatly enjoyed this basketball nerd conversation with you, Clay. So if folks want to know more about you, Coach, and your possible services, if they would like to inquire with you and all that different type of stuff, how can they reach out to you? How can they find out about you?
So here's the best way to do it is, so my Twitter is at CMOSER1162. So it's just like my first initial, last name, and then 1162 is when I was born. So if anybody wants to send me a belated birthday gift, they can do that. And then my Instagram and Threads is at CAMLAMCMM. So it's CAMLAMCMM, and that's the initials of my three children. So you'll see nine of them. So that's why they all end in M. Mm-hmm. So you can find me on those two. I'm on LinkedIn as well, just under my name. I'm on Facebook, just under my name. You can find me any of those places, and that'd probably be the best way to do it.
Awesome.
The other thing too, Marty, I was just gonna tell you. So I'm going to Hong Kong at the end of the year.
Okay.
To do a camp for USA Basketball and Coach Showalter, and then I'll get home. And then I'm going to Brazil.
Wow.
And while we were sitting here, I just had Luis from the Snow Valley?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's going to bring me to Colombia in the spring.
Oh, awesome. Awesome, yeah. Boy.
So I'm cranking up some frequent flyer moves and seeing the world.
And Show will be able to find a steakhouse in all three of those locations.
No doubt. You know, Sean's not going to these. He's going to, I think he's going to Denmark.
Oh, Denmark. Wow. God.
Yeah. So Sean and I aren't going together on these. And then on December 12th, I'm doing a FIBA clinic for about 500 coaches around the world.
Awesome. Awesome. Great stuff, Clay. It's been a pleasure and a privilege to have you on the podcast. I hope it's been a good night for you, my friend.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's always fun to talk hoops.
Yep. If you could just hold the line a second here. Again, Clay Mosier, basketball lifer. A lot of great stuff here tonight. Analytics, scouting, building teams. So many good things here. I've got a page full of notes here, just writing stuff down here. And I love the stuff about looking at the box scores and ways you could translate that and different things. So all stuff that we can do at any coach at pretty much any organized level. So want to thank Coach for his time here tonight. We want to thank our founding sponsor, Kosak Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Download, rate, review this, subscribe, give us 5 stars, all that fun stuff. Questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hold our craft one day at a time.